This is the Project Management Podcast. We bring project management topics to beginners and experts. Find us on the web at www.thepmpodcast.com or send your emails to pmpodcast@gmail.com. Hello and welcome to episode number 56. I am Cornelius Fichtner. This is the Project Management Podcast for the 18th of November 2006. The largest project that I have ever managed was about $1 million in size, and it lasted for 14 months. I have often wondered what it must be like to manage a multi-million, multi-year project that involves thousands of people. And by interviewing Tim Covington, I was able to glimpse into just such a project. The Boeing's C-17 single-line project, which is our main topic today. This project was the largest lean manufacturing project ever attempted on the C-17 program. We explore the goals and challenges involved, the success factors that enabled Tim and his core team to successfully deliver the project, the awards that the project has won, and Tim also gives us his tips to all those project managers out there that are embarking on a project of a similar size. Oh yes, and just to break our usual routine, we are going to ask Tim not just 10, but 11 final question. Today's episode is sponsored by Method 123. If you are looking for clear, easy-to-use project management templates, then look no further. Method 123 templates are ready for implementation on your project. And if I had known about these templates about a year ago when I was working on my company's project management methodology, I would have used them and saved myself probably quite a lot of time. The complete PM kit costs less than $300 and contains over 50 templates, but you can also buy individual templates if you'd like. To check them out, please go to the pmpodcast.com and click on the Method 123 banner. Next, we have one announcement, one listener question, and then we're going to move right into the interview. The announcement is, of course, the book giveaway. We have two copies of Quentin Fleming's book, Project Procurement Management. And reading this book, I mentioned it in the last episode, is a great way, if you are currently studying for the PMP exam, to learn about project procurement management. To participate in this book giveaway, send an email to pmpodcast@gmail.com. In the subject, write the word procurement. In the body of the email, write the town and the country that you are from. And send this off to me by the 29th of November 2006. And today's episode is the last episode before that due date, so do it right away, so that you can participate. And now let us hear the question that I have received on our voicemail line.
Hi Cornelius, this is Josh Nankivo. I am from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, here in the U.S. And I'm actually a student of project management at a university right now that's a rep. Just wanted to leave some feedback. I really enjoy the podcast. I've listened to almost every episode, just discovered it recently. Just been listening to every episode I can on every drive, every commute that I do. So just wanted to say thank you very much for that. Keep it up. I'm looking forward to the PMP PrepCast as well. I'm not going to be ready for the PMP for a little while, but I will be doing the CAPM pretty soon. Another thing really quick that I wanted to ask you is I'm looking to set up a project management student organization at the college that I'm at. We are a PMI rep, but we don't have a PM organization. And I just want to know if you had any feedback for me on that, maybe some helpful resources that I can go to as far as how to set that up. And, you know, just I'm looking to possibly bring in some different lectures to the group in order to give the students, you know, their impression of project management and different aspects of it. So one of the things that I'm thinking would be really good for the student group is to get people via Skype or something, so that we can do people all over the country and set it up so that, you know, we can listen to it and almost do like a little podcast and retain that stuff for the archives and make it public. So if you have any technical expertise that you want to share on how to do Skype interviews and that type of thing, that would also be really great. And thank you very much.
First of all, thank you very much for calling in, Josh. It's always great when I can have a listener's voice here on the program. So all you listeners out there who do have a question, please don't hesitate to either write or to call the voicemail feedback line that we have and ask your questions. Let's start out with the first comment that you made, the PM Prepcast. You no longer have to wait. You can already subscribe to the free version of the PM Prepcast and begin studying for the PMP exam. You can find that at pmprepcast.com. And at the end of today's episode, you can once again hear the promo for that new show. So listen all the way through the end. You asked about student organizations and how to set that up. Well, I'm not quite sure. Are you trying to do this just locally, nationally, worldwide? Do you want to be an independent organization, or do you want to be an affiliate of an umbrella project management organization like the ASAPM, the IPMA, or the PMI? Those are all kinds of questions that you're going to have to answer for yourself first. Let me speak a little bit to the PMI, because the PMI is going through a community transformation program at the moment, and they have just finished it, and they have announced what kind of components, chapters are now available to you. So what you could think of is becoming a branch of your local chapter. I also think that the PMI used to have in the past student associations like you discuss it, but I don't think those exist any longer. What I have for you is, in today's helpful resources, a link to the Community Transformation Program on the PMI website so that you can go and check out what is possible if you would like to become an affiliate amongst all the PMI components. If you would prefer working together with the ASAPM, then go ahead and contact Stacy Goff. We had Stacy Goff on the program on the last episode, as a matter of fact, talking about competence-based certifications. And he can be reached at stacy@asapm.org. Unfortunately, I have no contacts in the IPMA, so I suggest that you start with the ipma.ch website. Most importantly, however, no matter how you're going to do this and what you're going to do, think about this. You are a student in project management, so turn the creation of your student organization here into a model project. Get your professors involved. Find a sponsor. Do a business case. Create a project charter. Prepare a plan. Set goals, measurements, timelines. And, of course, form a project team with appropriate people from within your project management classes. If you do it that way, you will not only be able to create the student organization that is right for what you're trying to do, but you will also learn about hands-on project management by doing it. All right, your final question was about technical help with Skype. Skype is great when it works and the sound quality is absolutely fabulous. And many of my interviews are, in fact, via Skype. It is not a conference call tool, and I think you can only have a maximum of 5 people on a Skype call. If you want a conference tool, then check out pmlessonslearned.com. That is the new podcast by Henry Will. They actually do a conference call where people are listening in, and then they publish that as well as a podcast. Nevertheless, one thing that I have noticed is that people want to talk about their project management experience. I haven't only noticed this here on the program, I also noticed this when I was running a advanced topics seminar for my own PMI chapter. Don't be shy about asking even the most experienced project manager you can think of if they would like to speak for your group. Trust me, they will be delighted to speak to you. Yes, and this is my response to you, Josh. I hope it has been helpful for you. Now, let us move on to the main topic of today, which is the interview with Tim Covington about the C-17 project. Tim is a project manager for, obviously, the Boeing company. He works on the C-17 military cargo aircraft program here in Long Beach, California. Tim has been with Boeing for 19 years. During his career at Boeing, Tim has led many projects in production operations that improved the manufacturing of the C-17 aircraft. Recently, he actually transferred to engineering, where he is an SME, a subject matter expert in project management methodologies. Tim is a certified PMP and holds an undergraduate degree in business management and is currently enrolled in a project management master's degree program at the George Washington University. Now, before we kick off the interview, just one more remark. Tim has given us a presentation about the C-17 program. If you are subscribed to the podcast through iTunes or a similar podcatching software, then it should automatically have downloaded to your computer. If you don't have it, go to the website to episode 56 and there will be a link for you to download this presentation manually. And now on with the interview. I hope you enjoy it.
The Project Management Podcasts feature interview.
Today, with Tim Covington, PMP, Project Manager Specialist, C-17 Engineering.
Hello, Tim, and welcome to the program.
Thank you, Cornelius. Nice to be here.
Oh, we're very happy to have you. Thank you. The first time that I talked to you about the C-17 program, that's when we met, I think it was in a Marie Callender's restaurant, and you showed the C-17 single line presentation to me, and you were absolutely passionate about that particular project. Why are you so passionate about this particular project?
Well, Cornelius, yes, I was very passionate about the project, I have to admit. And to this day, it really is a proud moment in my career. And really, my passion was it was an opportunity of a career to be involved in such an important project that would have quite a tremendous impact on the C-17 program in the future.
Let's start out with an overview of the program then. What was the C-17 single line project all about?
Okay. First, if you can picture this in your mind, prior to the single line project, we used to have two lines to build the aircraft in final assembly. The challenge for us was to reduce the lines from two down to one, thus the single line project. That's how it got its name. What that involved was taking a look at opportunities to reduce the span time, the overall time it takes to produce the airplane. So the challenge was to apply lean principles and come up with opportunities for savings and where we could take work content and move it so it's in parallel with other work. In effect, we took an 80-day span and reduced it down to 64 days, approximately 20%. We went from 5 positions in 2 lines down to 4 positions in 1 line, mm-hmm. therefore 20% reduction. And of course, the benefits of pushing performance also reduced the cost of the aircraft.
Right. Let me try to paint a picture here for the listeners what you meant by 2 line versus 1 line. So you have a humongously large construction hall, mm-hmm. right, where the aircraft comes in on the
one side of that of the building. Mm-hmm. In that, it then moves through four stages. I think you had four spots, right?
Actually, three positions.
Yep, three positions
in right. one line.
Okay. Then it makes a U turn.
Exactly.
Goes out of the building and comes in the other door again.
Right.
And goes back the way it came in on the second line, where you had another three?
Two positions.
Another two positions.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that was, the challenge there was to take the work content that was in those two positions and consolidate them into the other line, which had the three positions, which gave us a total of four positions in one single line.
Right. Why did you get selected as the project manager for this project? What's your background?
I've been with the Boeing Company for about 19 years. Prior to the single line, I'd done numerous projects in production operations, which is the manufacturing of the aircraft. I had taken on many projects related to manufacturing of the airplane, and I was fortunate enough just to be in the right place at the right mm-hmm. time. I had showed my passion for project management on numerous occasions, and I really believe that the company, it was mutual. I look forward to the opportunity, and I think they saw the potential in me to pull this off.
So were any of the previous projects as complex as this one?
No, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I can't say enough about how much I appreciate the fact that management had that trust in me and believed in me to be able to pull something off like this, because it was the largest lean manufacturing project ever to be attempted on the C-17 program.
Nice. What were the goals of the project?
Well, the goals were to reduce the span time by 20%, to go from 80 days down to 64 days. And our whole business case for the project was based on the cost savings, because as you raise the bar, as you consolidate, as you apply lean principles and methodologies, your performance should improve. And performance improvements results in cost savings. Mm-hmm. So there was another challenge that came about, which was really just a kind of a icing on the cake for the project, in that not only were we reducing the cost of the aircraft and reducing span time or total time to produce the airplane, we were freeing up approximately 160,000 square feet of premium manufacturing space by opening up that one line. And what that gave us is the opportunity in the future to bring in another program. So not only could we have C-17 being built in that facility, but also another type of aircraft.
Has that happened in the meantime?
Well, there's opportunities there still. But there's one thing I want to emphasize. The business case for the single-line initiative was predicated solely on the cost savings of reducing span from 80 days down to 64 days. If a program is never, ever realized in that empty bay or empty line, the cost benefits still supported this and continue to support the single line initiative.
Yes. You've already mentioned you've been able to actually reduce it down to 64 days.
Right? Oh, yes, yes.
What would you attribute the success to? Why did you, in the end, get it down from 80 to 64?
Well, what we did is we challenged our people. I mean, you can't say enough about the synergy that comes from teaming. We worked real closely with our people on the shop floor. Those are the people that live with reality every day. They know what it takes to build the airplane. We brought together the best mechanics on the shop floor, along with the best engineers and industrial engineers, manufacturing engineers on the program, and we teamed and we were able to come up with a build sequence that would allow us to go from 80 days down to 64 days.
How many people were involved in the project?
My core team existed of 20 individuals, and they represented different areas: business operations, engineering, manufacturing. The customer was very closely involved in this project. And when I say the customer, I need to clarify, there was an end user and there was a customer. The customer was the people on the floor, the mechanics actually building the airplane. They were our customer for reducing the amount of time it would take to build the airplane, giving them the tools they needed so that they could work more efficiently to reduce the span time. Our end user was the United States Air Force. They're our customer, in effect, in our situation, the end user of our product, which is the C-17 airlift cargo. And their concern was that they were really pleased that we were looking at a way of reducing cost on the aircraft, which is always a benefit. But at the same time, one of the challenges was that we had to maintain our current scheduled deliveries. In effect, we were making this huge change to the assembly line, but we had to do it transparent to ongoing production. The airplanes continued to have to be delivered to the Air Force. So their involvement was very key, and they worked very close with us to support us to make sure that they got a vote on what we were doing.
So let me make sure I understood this correctly. You made a humongous change to this production line, and at the same time, you had to keep it going as is, and you had to keep building aircrafts. Mm-hmm. How did you manage to do that?
Well, it was what we called a phased implementation. What we looked at was where there were opportunities to move these large assembly jigs, which are these large, tremendously large tools that the aircraft is actually nested in and assembled. What we did is we looked at opportunities by modeling. We did a lot of modeling and simulation where we could take work content and phase it, keep moving it to the back of the line, you know, where we could overlap work. And it was just excellent coordination on our scheduling people. Scheduling people did an awesome job in making sure that we knew exactly what the expectations of the production line was and what the impact of our project would have on the production line. And we worked really close hand in hand to make sure that the phased implementation went together absolutely perfect.
Let's talk a little bit more about the people on the project. How did you manage your relationship, your communication with all the people involved?
Well, just to let you know, we worked in a what I call a strong matrix type organization. I reported directly to the senior management as well as the functional managers who were supporting the activity. I was just fortunate enough, to be honest with you, Cornelius, to have really good people on my team. I just cannot say enough about the people on my team. I am so proud of them. The key, and I think it is my strength, though, is my people skills. I think, you know, every day we all go in and do our best, do a good job, and I think that I was able to bring that out in the team. I was able to focus their skills, their skill sets, on what needed to get done, and I made it a challenge for them. We had a lot of teaming meetings. We had a lot of working luncheons. We did a lot of things afterwards, got together for drinks or activities outside of work, and really it became our project, and our team, every member, was key to our success.
And what about the people on the shop floor? How did you manage the relationship with them?
Well, it's interesting, and I use the term lean. You know, lean, of course, is the direction that we're going in manufacturing, and it's even moving into the office. But we all know about lean methodologies and practices. Well, it's kind of funny, as I understand it, lean to the shop people is an acronym for less employees are needed. To get past that, we showed them the benefits of why we of doing what we needed to do, and the number one benefit was that we needed to reduce the cost of the aircraft. Without reducing the cost of the aircraft, our customer, being the United States Air Force, could not afford it in years out because defense budgets continue to reduce. So we showed them that there was an opportunity here to lengthen our longevity on the program by getting the cost of the aircraft down so that our customer, the United States Air Force, can buy more. Also, just again, a little icing on the cake, we also showed them the benefits of opening up that additional line. Perhaps not in the foreseeable future, but down the road, if another program would come in there, that would be an opportunity to extend the viability of that facility for many years to come. So it was twofold, and I was able, along with upper management, working closely with our union representatives, able to show them the benefits and got everybody on board on the single line initiative.
Excellent people management.
You know, it just seems the right thing to do. You know, I think if you're honest with people and show them that we're all in this for the same thing, I think we all go to work to try to, you know, make a living for our families and treat people with respect. And of course, again, the synergy that comes with teaming is, you know, we can overcome just about anything.
How long did the project take from start to finish?
Good question. The initial planning phase, you know, went on for about a year. We did a lot of studies. We did a failure modes and effect analysis because of the complexity of the build operation out there. We did a lot of intense studies, technical and also to flush out any potential risks. We did that for about a year. The project was actually launched at the end of that year and continued on for approximately 2 years. So the total time for the project was about 3 years.
You've already mentioned that the primary goal was to reduce the cost by about 20%, right? That you had the additional constraint that you needed to continue with the production. But there are always, you know, the constraints. You have scope, quality, schedule, cost.
Yes.
Right? What was your primary constraint?
Well, I can't underemphasize schedule because, again, we had to continue moving aircraft down the production line. But at the same time, we had to make sure that we got it right the first time. You know, it's first-time quality, and that's it, because when you have a production line that is that important to your customer and measure, you know, the work content by the minute, we had to make sure that all the work packages that we were trying to move around and implement and redefine our critical path, we had to make sure that the quality was at the highest level we could be. We needed to make sure that we gave the people on the shop floor the highest quality tools so that when they went in there to take on a task that had risk, because, again, the production line's still moving, that they were able to go in there and get the job done and get out of the way of the airplane.
Talking about high-quality tools, that triggered a memory from when we sat in Marie Callender's there. You were talking about Microsoft Project and that you actually used Microsoft Project on this huge project. What exactly did you use it again for? I can't remember.
Well, you know, it's funny. There's the Microsoft, believers, and there's not. But I am a strong believer in Microsoft projects. I've had great success with it. I don't think people can really appreciate its capabilities. But we had approximately 3,200 work packages. They're called assembly orders, and they're tasks that are involved in sequencing the build of the airplane. Well, what we did is we took 80 days of work content and compressed it by 20%. Well, our critical path for that build process just shifted, okay? So what we had to do is take all 3,200 tasks and put them in Microsoft projects, re-estimate durations, look at successor predecessor relationships, and redefine the actual build of the airplane. Microsoft Projects was the only tool that we were aware of that had the computing capability to actually schedule that much activity and that kind of content and hold that much data for us.
How long did it take to compute it?
Well, yeah, that's interesting. It actually took three industrial engineers 6 months working full time on the effort to input it and, of course, develop, you know, the network diagram and all the setting durations and resources. It was definitely the biggest challenge on our project was the actual sequencing of the work.
While we're talking about tools, let's also look at the project management methodology. Did you get any project management methodology prescribed that you had to follow, or how did you do it?
Well, you know, there's a lot of ways to do project management.
Yes.
There's only one right way, and that's the one that that gets the project finished, right? But actually, I'm kind of a PMI zealot. I think that the PMBOK really has the information in there to give you the tools you need to run a successful project. With that said, though, of course, being Boeing and a large corporation, we have certain project culture, and we do have processes in place, and many of them are parallel to the PMBOK, but there was some unique challenges within that. And, of course, trying to overcome some of those challenges is, you know, this is the way we've always done things. This is the way we should do it in the future. But that's not always the key to moving forward and, you know, continuous improvement. So. Right.
So you took what you had and adapted it for your project then?
Exactly. You know, I kind of added a little PMI-ism to a little bit of Boeing culture and was able to bring it together.
If you could do the project again, what would you do differently?
Oh, I love that question because, you know, I would ask for a raise up front, to be honest with you, if I knew how big it was going to be. You know, we did a lot of things well, you know, and I'm not boasting. The team really was the key to the success of the single line. I think there may have been some opportunities there where we could have probably have worked closer in bringing it together earlier, because here we are kind of towards the end of the program. I think a lot of your listeners are probably familiar with the C-17 program and have heard news recently about some of the shortcomings in the coming years because of reduced defense spending and such. I just wish not so much if we'd have done anything different on the project, but if we'd have had the opportunity to do the project earlier in the program, say in the early 2000 period, something like that.
Speaking from a project management point of view, what have you learned in this particular project for yourself?
Well, I think sometimes I look around and I think, geez, you know, is quality still alive? You know, can good old USA still compete? And I have to say with a resounding yes, we can. And I think the key, though, is to challenge people. I think sometimes we become complacent. And I have to admit, Cornelius, at the beginning, there was a lot of naysayers. There were people running away from this project thinking that this could be, you know, the career-ending experience. But what it was is an opportunity. And I seized the opportunity, and I challenged people. And with I can say now with great confidence that when people are challenged, they raise to the occasion, and that that is what happened there.
Did you use earned value on the project?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Earned value, when I started the project, was just one of those budget things I knew I was going to have to deal with. And I've found in life that usually the things that I avoid are the ones I really should be working. Those are the issues I need to focus on. So I got to sit down and spend some time with some really top-notch budget people and come to appreciate the benefits of earned value. We had a really robust earned value management system, and we were able to monitor the project real close.
Can you pull a few best practices out of your bag of tricks that you've learned for us?
Well, I doubt that it can be understated, and this is a great opportunity to say communicate, communicate, communicate. I really feel that my strength and our strength as a team was we were able to have good, clear lines of communication, open and honest. Another thing, always keep your eye on the risk horizon, because risk is predicting the future, okay? To the best of my knowledge, nobody does that with real good frequency. However, we know that we can plan, we can put together a good risk plan, and we can monitor it. But sometimes we get caught up in the successes of our projects or just the day-to-day mundane routine of the project, and we take our eyes off of what I call the risk horizon. And the risk horizon is where those things are going to pop up. And what you have to do is be ready for that. Always keep yourself in that mode. Always try to be out ahead of what's going to happen, but realize that projects take on different shapes as you move along. And as you move forward, you learn more, but there's always going to be a surprise down the road. Don't worry about it, though. Just be prepared.
One of the surprises is probably change requests that are coming in. How did you manage your change requests? Did you have a change board or a formal process? How do you handle that?
Well, we did. We had a change board, and there were formal ways. But interesting you brought that up, because here was my quandary. As I mentioned to you, I had the customer, which was the people on the shop floor, our production organization, and I had the end user, which was the Air Force. Well, a lot of times I'd have the Air Force on one side and I'd have the production people on the other side, and they'd be nudging me to make a change, to go in this direction or that direction. And what I would have to do is try to make compromises. But at the same time, I had an open and honest enough communication with the customer and the end user to let them know that this was the agreed upon scope from the beginning of the project. Here we are down the road, and for us to change direction, which we were willing to do, however, there's a cost. There's a trade-off. It's either going to be cost or schedule or both. So, you know, that was the thing. I mean, I was always there to mediate, and but it was interesting. The change would come from two directions instead of normally just one.
What was your biggest challenge on the project?
Well, I have to admit that we had to overcome. We were definitely changing the culture. Okay? We were doing things that had never been attempted before. We were doing things to the airplane. We were doing things from an engineering perspective, not just from a manufacturing perspective about how the aircraft was actually built, but we were looking at doing things differently structurally to the airplane. And so we had to put together a position on a change that would influence the engineering organization to go along with this. And engineering, of course, they have a very important job, and they're not real quick to respond. They need the time to look at it. So one of the biggest challenges was working with engineering and putting together a position and having data there that shows them that there are benefits to building the airplane this way. And even though it goes against the standard status quo of how we've been building the airplane, here's an opportunity to, you know, go to the next level.
You mentioned culture. How did the project change the culture of the company?
You know, it was great. This is so exciting for me because we had, as the project progressed and we had milestones where we would have major assembly jigs being relocated, and we'd actually have these ceremonies where people would be there and we'd have coffee and donuts and, you know, a ribbon cutting and such. And at the beginning, there wasn't a big turnout for these. Even though we had donuts, I thought anybody would come to a ceremony for donuts and coffee. But as time went on and we started seeing more people coming, and that equated to more people involved, and seeing the people out on the shop floor saying, you know what, you're absolutely right. It is a good thing we went this direction. That meant everything.
Mm. Would you consider that your greatest success?
Yeah, I'm a person type project manager. Project management to me, you know, if I break it up, is for me it's 60% art and 40% science. I think people skills. I'm just feel blessed that that is my strength. I think it's very important. I really enjoy working with people, and I like the relationship developed with the customer and giving the customer what they want. But at the same time, giving my teammates, my team members, a feeling of accomplishment. I think that was really awesome.
All right. You've got a successful project. Successful projects always get recognized. Let's talk about the awards that you got. I know you have received two awards for the project in the past. Did any others get added to it in the meantime since we last spoke about it?
Well, let me see. Of course, the two awards that it received, the Silver Eagle Award from the Boeing Company, and then one that meant a lot to me was the Project of the Year for the L.A. chapter of the Project Management Institute. Since then, we competed in the California Team Excellence Award and came in second place against all these project teams within the state of California, which allowed us to go to the international competition for the American Society of Quality, and we were finalists in the American Society of Quality competition. So I have four very beautiful trophies that sit in my boss's office, but very proud of what we accomplished.
Very nice. So once the project was over, what came after that? It sounds like nothing can beat that.
That's what I thought. But, you know, during that period, actually, I went on and got my PMP. And since then, I've actually gone back to school now, and I'm working on my master's degree in project management at George Washington University. Also, there was an opportunity to move into the C-17 engineering. I was in production operations, and I was offered a position in engineering, and what I'm doing there is taking project management best practices and applying them to the engineering projects.
All right. In conclusion, what advice would you give to a project manager out there who is embarking on a project of similar complexity? What are the keys to successful project management?
Well, obviously, you know, you have to understand the requirements of the customer up front. You really need to spend time up front with the customer, you know, do good scope definition, get agreement, make sure that what you perceive to be the requirement is also meets the customer's needs. I think you have to get management buy-in to make sure that they're going to give you the resources to support the project. And, you know, just take advantage of the skills of good people. You know, there's so much potential. And what you have to do as a project manager is to lead as well as manage. And I think leading is really key, because people, there's a charisma that comes with leadership. And when people see your enthusiasm about the project and your ability to overcome no matter what lies ahead, I think that's contagious. I think people get caught up in that. And I think they gain confidence in you as a project manager. So you really have to have that passion. You need to go out there and you have to set an example as a leader and motivate your people, and then absolutely recognize them every opportunity you get for their efforts.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time so far discussing the C-17 project. Are you ready to move on to the final 10 questions?
Absolutely.
Right. These are the same 10 questions that we ask everyone here on the program. And even though I've asked them, what, 30 or so times, I still have to cheat and read them off.
No problem.
Number one, what was your favorite project? Oh, if I don't know the answer to that.
I'll give you a hint. A single line, absolutely.
Absolutely. Number two, what project would you like to have managed?
Probably the Apollo space program, or perhaps International Space Station. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it kind of has that aerospace theme to it and such. And I think, you know, there were such great accomplishments there for mankind. I would have liked to have been a part of that.
Number three, what is your favorite project management book?
Well, right now, being in a graduate program, I have to say honestly, there isn't very many textbooks that I enjoy right now, because that's all I do is spend reading them. But interestingly, though, is anything written by Rita Mulcahy. I did a lot of reading in preparation for PMP, and you know, I still go back to her books, because she has such a good simplified way of helping a person understand the benefits of project management.
Number four, what is the topic of the next seminar that you're planning to attend?
Well, I'm going to be at the PMI North American Global Congress Conference here starting Saturday through Tuesday. There's a lot of opportunities there. One that I'm going to look at, one of the breakout sessions, has to do with project management competencies and skill sets. I'm quite interested in that. That's part of my responsibility in my new position. So I think that would be really neat to sit in on that.
Number five, what is the best way to make a project fail?
Fail to communicate. I really, you know, that, you know, 95% they say what we do as project managers is communication. I think if you fail to communicate, not just putting out a lot of information, but information of value. If you fail to do that, your project will fail.
Number six, how do you like to celebrate a successful project?
I like recognizing my team. You know, there's a lot of people, but, you know, in my situation, there was a core of 20 team members, and recognizing them and making sure that management is part of that recognition. My responsibility to the project was to facilitate and lead this team. The team is really what made the project a success.
Let me ask question 6.5. How did you celebrate the C-17 project?
We went to actually quite a few dinners for these awards that we won. And, you know, and the last one that we were involved in, which was the ASQ, American Society of Quality competition back in Milwaukee, we got to go out with two high-ranking members of the Boeing company, and they were gracious to take us out to dinner and really recognize us. We were at that time, our team had broken down to about 5 people, and it was really great, really good time.
Number 7, in your projects, where do you focus most of your attention in order to be successful?
Oh, good question. Well, actually, my people skills is where I focus most of my effort.
I knew it.
Yeah. I really find that to be my strength. I really enjoy working with people. I've numerous times been in the positions that they've been to support projects. I've been in the capacity of a team member on numerous projects in the past. And I just know that people are looking for someone to lead them. And that's where my focus is focusing on the people, because they're the ones that get the results. I lead, they follow, we all win.
Number 8, if you weren't a project manager, what would you like to be?
I'd like to have your job. getting to interview all these neat project
Trust
managers.
Trust me, it's a hell of a lot more work than you think it is.
I bet.
Number 9, what is the one thing that a project manager cannot live without?
In my opinion, a project manager cannot live without passion. They have to have passion for what they do. They have to be able to go out there and face each day, no matter what lies ahead, with a drive and leadership that motivates people. And I think that passion is what drives great leaders.
And finally, number 10, the oldest question in project management. What is more important in a project manager? Is it project management expertise or is it industry expertise?
Very good question, and this is a very good way to end it. I have a particular philosophy about this. I do, as I mentioned to you, work in a technical environment, was in production operations, now in engineering. What I found is successful project managers know where to get the information. I think they know the limitations of their abilities technically. There isn't one project manager that knows everything, but there is a project manager who knows who to ask for everything. So I would say that the project management expertise is really paramount to the industry expertise, because there will be subject matter experts within that industry, but those subject matter experts aren't necessarily good project managers.
Great. Thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate you having had you on the program.
Okay. Thank you very much, Cornelius.
And that was Tim Covington discussing the Boeing C-17 single line project with me. Let me remind you that you will find a link to purchase the books that our interview guests recommend in the helpful resources section of today's episode and any past episode. Tune in again in 2 weeks for our next episode. I have 3 interviews lined up for you, one about dysfunctional teams, one about critical chain project management, and one about service-oriented project management. You're going to have to come back and see which one it's going to be. And yes, you heard me right, in 2 weeks, because until the end of the year, we will be coming to you only every other week. And that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. As always, you can find us on the web at www.thepmpodcast.com, and now also, of course, at pmprepcast.com. Or send your emails to pmpodcast@gmail.com. And when you write, please tell me where in the world you are writing from.
And when you stop by at the PMPodcast.com, please don't forget to click on the link labeled Scalable PM Methods. That is in the left-hand navigation under PM Help. That link will take you to the 10-step website where you can learn about scalable project management methodologies. And here is a quick final tip for you before we go. If your project team members are constantly being pulled off to do other jobs, consider co-locating them. If you have the opportunity to bring your team members together into one area of your building, of your company, for the duration of the project, that will do two things. It will improve the communication among your team members, and it will also signal to other employees of your company that this group, this team, is now working on a new project and should not be pulled off to do other odd jobs. And finally, we have this. 9 signs that tell you that it is time to get out of project management. I found this on projectsmart.co.uk, and you can find a link to it and other similar lists like this in the helpful resources section of today's episode. So here we go. 9 signs that tell you that it's time to get out of project management. Number 9, you refer to your other half as the budget holder. Number 8, your personal life is planned to the nth degree. Number 7, you write a project contract for your next holiday. Number 6, safe sex involves a risk log and contingency plan. Number 5, you organize your family into more efficient team-based structures. Number 4, the deliverables for Saturday are shopping and washing. Number 3, you mitigate the risk when your in-laws are visiting. Number 2, you find yourself explaining Gantt charts, PER charts, CPM diagrams to the people down at the pub. And number 1, you are reading the project management body of knowledge or the Prince 2 handbook in bed. Until next time. Are you studying to take the PMP exam? Are you tired of reading the PMBOK guide yet? Wouldn't it be great if you could use your MP3 player to prepare for the exam? Well, now you can by listening to the Project Management Prepcast. I am Cornelius Fichtner, the host of the Project Management Podcast, and now also the host of the Project Management Prepcast. In this new program, I will systematically get you acquainted with the tools and techniques, methodologies and theories to help you feel ready to sit for the PMI's Project Management Professional Exam. It's never been easier. And trust me, it's much more entertaining than the PMBOK guide. And the even better news, it's free until January 2006. So go ahead and listen in today at www.pmprepcast.com. Together, we can put those 3 letters behind your name.